Could you please tell me what it means to be unworthy servant or unprofitable servant? I know the woman very well. She's very much in the church, faithful and trying hard. Yet she was afraid that she wasn't growing enough, fast enough, or perhaps well enough. The scripture shared in mind was in Luke 17, chapter 17, verse 10. I wonder if some of us have wondered about this too, because of the fact Christ speaks to about a servant. He says, Luke 17, 10, "So you too, if you have done all that is commanded of you, you say we are unworthy servants. We have only done what's our duty." I wonder just if some of us feel this way, if some of us praying hard enough, being as good a Christian as we can, then perhaps like this woman, feel somewhat discouraged and say, "Look, I'm trying to do the best I can, yet I am just not growing enough. What's wrong with me? Am I really being unworthy?" Of course, with Passover approaching, and all of us have to start examining ourselves to really see if we are truly Christians. But we have to be careful not to get discouraged. Because of the fact this verse is not to discourage us, it is to encourage us to do what we're supposed to do and plus. And that's, I think, what she missed. I promised I will be either writing on the subject or perhaps speaking on the subject. And here I am. I don't know if she's here, but I hope that somehow she might hear about this sermon. Because I want to explain what Luke 17:10 really means. Perhaps, if I could say something without being misunderstood, when you read this, you feel as though Christ is asking something impossible. How could you do all that is required of you and still be unworthy? Does that mean that you have to do the impossible? Again, I repeat, I hope I won't be misunderstood. My answer is yes. Christ wants you to do the impossible. You know why? Let me show it to you. In Mark chapter 10, very well-known passage, verse 17, a young man came to him, knelt before him, Mark 10, 17. He said, "Master, what shall I do?" Verse 19, Christ said, "You know, the commandments, keep them." And the man in verse 20 says, "Teacher, all these I have observed." Now wait a moment, just remind me of this lady last week. She is doing everything she can. She has. And she has been observing God's laws. Just like this young man over here. He is doing everything he can, everything he possibly could. Verse 21, Christ looks at him, he says, and Christ loved him. That's beautiful. The man is doing the best he can. Christ loves him. Yet Christ tells him, "You lack one thing. Go and sell what you have and give to the poor. And you will have treasure in heaven." Verse 22, the man's countenance, of course, fell. He went away sorrowful. Now, I just wonder, does the Bible say you really have to give up everything you have? You have to sell everything? No. But why did Christ ask him that? You know, of course, the answer. Because of the fact the man's heart was so much attached that actually even though he was keeping God's commandments, even though he was doing everything he should do, he did not go all over and above. He did not do more than is required of him. And Christ showed him what his weak points was. But the man did not understand. But was he actually asking something impossible of the man? Frankly, yes. The man was not able to because of the fact that this man here did not have God's Spirit. But you do, you have it. I have it. Therefore, with God, all things are possible. In fact, look what's going to happen now. Because when the disciples heard this, They were confused. Verse 23. They said then, how hard it is for anyone to be saved. It's true. What was Christ's answer? Very interesting, isn't it? Look the way he's answering now. He says, verse 27. Christ told them, with men it is impossible. But with God all things are possible. Therefore he said, this man on his own could not do it. Could not have done it. But this man, with God's help, with God's Spirit, he could have done it. Therefore, yes, God expects us to be to do the impossible, because he is going to do it for us. The fact is, do we surrender to him? Do we do our share? Now that's the starting point for Luke 17:10. We have to do things that we humanly are not able to do, but with God's help we can. And this, brethren, I think it's the biggest difficulty in the church today with some of us. Some of us are still trying year after year to be just a good member. Just do our own share. Just be a good Christian. Just be a good servant. And that is not enough. We're not doing more than it is required, because we're not counting more on God's Spirit in us. We're not letting God do the impossible for us. You can't do it, I cannot do it, but God can. Christ says, with God all things are possible. And some of us, I'm afraid, we're counting too much on our own. And that's why we are not growing enough, getting close enough to God, and wondering, why don't I grow? What's wrong with that woman last week? She said, look, and I know she's doing everything she can. She says, I don't feel I'm growing. Well, because we're not trying, all of us, hard enough. We all have received too much. In Luke chapter 12, again, Christ explains the very principle. Luke 12, verse 48. Christ says, to whom much is given, much will be required. Luke 12, 48. Now, this applies to you and this applies to me. What is the greatest thing in life you can receive? What is the greatest gift in life? God's Spirit. So you have received God's Spirit. You are given God's Spirit. Therefore, much will be required of you. Much more than you possibly humanly can give. But that which you cannot give humanly and possibly, Christ is going to do it. If you surrender to him. Luke 17:10, as I mentioned a moment ago, applies to you and to me. Applies to real Christians. Because only the real Christians who have God's Spirit can do over and above that which is required. You see, humanly, I cannot fight against my human nature. I can't. It's impossible. God can. Humanly, I cannot fight against Satan. God can. Humanly, I cannot fight against the world. God can. Therefore, if I'm only being a good Christian, doing my share, paying my tithes, keeping God's commandments, keeping the feast days or the Sabbaths, I am an unworthy servant. Because I'm not fighting enough with God's Spirit to overcome that which he alone can do with his Spirit. You know, the best explanation of this is in the Sermon on the Mount, as Christ mentioned. He shows the difference between what you can do and what God's Spirit can do through you and with you. In Matthew chapter 5, Matthew 5, verse 21, Christ is showing how much is expected of you if you don't have God's Spirit, and how much is expected of you if you have God's Spirit. Matthew 5:21. He says, you have heard it said of old that you should not kill. Now that's humanly possible. I can be a person, train myself not to kill. I can go as far as that. I can perhaps have a nice education. Verse 22, but I, Christ, say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother shall be liable to the council. Now, this is the part which is, humanly speaking, impossible, which makes you and which makes me worthy servant if we do it with God's help. The whole difference between the world and us, brethren, they can be as good as we are, or we can, but they cannot obey verse 22 without God's help. And you can't unless you have God's Spirit. The fact remains, are you doing it? How many of us who believe not to kill, not we don't kill, transgress, verse 22, Matthew 5:22, we get angry, we insult our brother. Therefore, at the end, we find ourselves being unworthy. I hope you get the point. Again, verse 27, Christ says, you have heard you should not commit adultery. Fine, we don't. I hope we don't. But he says, I say to you, verse 28, even if you look at a woman lustfully, you have committed adultery. Now, this is that part which makes the difference between being worthy and unworthy. I might spend all my life as a Christian being faithful to my wife, but I might still transgress this law if I look at a woman lustfully. Therefore, I become an unworthy servant. I can only succeed in this if I let Christ in me work through me and guide me and help me. Therefore, again, I repeat, it is impossible for man, but all things are possible with God. Verse 33, you have heard it said, you should not swear. Well, anyone in the world can learn this thing. Anyone in the world can practice this thing. But Christ said, verse 34, but I say to you. And then he tells you how never to swear. Again, this only could be achieved by and with God's Spirit. And then goes a bit further, much harder. And that's the whole difference between being worthy and unworthy servant. Verse 43, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. This is humanly possible. Anyone can do it. There are lots of good people on the face of the earth, not in the church, who will obey this commandment very gladly. It's very simple. But Christ says that isn't what makes you worthy or profitable servant. Yet to go a bit farther, he says, but I, verse 44, but I say to you, love your enemies. Now this is impossible for you and for me unless we let God's Spirit do it through us. You can't. You can't really love your enemy unless you have God's Spirit in you. He says, pray for those who persecute you. It takes a lot of God's Spirit. This is what makes it impossible, yet God makes it possible for us. He says, so that, verse 45, so that you may be sons of your Father. Beautiful. Now you can see the way we can be changing and letting God do the impossible for us in order for us to become worthy in His eyes. You know, it's very easy to love a friend. It's very easy to love someone who is doing something good to you. It's hard, very hard to love an enemy. It's awfully hard to pray for an enemy. If you know someone is hurting you and doing you evil, pray for him and bless him. That takes something much more than you and I can give. And that's what Christ wants us to learn. Otherwise, you see, if you're just going to love the people who love you, I should say you don't have anything more than the people in the world. You are just like the other people, therefore you are an unworthy servant. In John 13, again Christ shows the difference between worthy and unworthy servants by showing how to love. He says, verse 34, John 13:34. He says, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Now wait a moment, this is not new. This is the old commandment. This is the one you find in Deuteronomy. That is the part anyone can do, if you learn. But what comes afterwards is what makes the difference between a worthy and unworthy servant, between one who has God's Spirit and one who doesn't, between one who does the impossible and one who doesn't. And that's the following part of the verse. He says, you have to love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. This is the part which makes it different. You have to love someone as Christ loves you. That's a whole difference. Total difference, I should say. And that's the only way you can do with God's Spirit. Therefore, you see, when you start wondering why you aren't growing enough, what's wrong with you? It's very possible you are just being a good Christian, which is not good enough for God. You have to go over and above. You have to go much farther. Do something which, humanly speaking, is not possible. And with God's help, you will do it. Again, back in Matthew 5, because that's where Christ really explains what the whole difference is between being worthy and unworthy. He tells you something else as to how to be worthy. Matthew 5. Verse 46, I'll just go a bit further from what I read a moment ago. He says, for if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Anyone can do it. Any Christian, any Muslim, anyone can do it. That's easy. And it says, do not even the tax collectors or the Gentiles do the same? Verse 47, if you salute only your brethren, or help them, or serve them, What more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Then he says, be you perfect. You cannot be perfect unless you have God's Spirit in you. And that's again what makes you be profitable servant. You see, brother, otherwise we get frustrated. Time and again, year after year after year, for many years in the Church of God, people have wondered why they don't grow fast enough. What's wrong with me, they ask. What's wrong with you? It's very simple. You are only doing what's required of you. And that's the whole problem. You're not doing more. And the more, I repeat, is only what Christ can do through you. We must excel, brethren, excel in everything. We must excel as Christians. We must excel as church members. We must excel. When you compare to the world, no one in the world should be as good a Christian as we are. And we can only do that by with the Spirit of Christ in us. You know, for years, Mr. Armstrong has tried to excel in everything he does. You heard a moment ago how beautiful it is when where he is, Tucson, and everything else, fine. But look at the campus around here. It's the best, beautiful, the most beautiful, the best campus. Why? Because, you see, he did not do what was required of him. He went over and above to make the best, to excel. For years, we have been learning in the college to excel in everything we do. But for years, some of us are just being satisfied doing what we do, without trying to excel. If we don't try to excel, if we don't really push hard enough, then we are going to be unworthy servants. In Matthew, again, back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 20. How often have you read this verse, and how often have you applied to yourself? Matthew 5:20. Christ says, for I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes of the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now wait a moment. Unless my righteousness except that of the scribes and the Pharisees. How can I? I can't. I can only do with Christ's help. And that's the whole problem, brethren. A lot of people today in the Church of God, they are trying to do on their own. And their righteousness does not exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. Because we're not letting Christ do through us. We haven't surrendered enough to Christ. We're not trying hard enough. Let me give you a few personal examples to be easier. Let's take the case of a prayer. I'm sure we all pray to God. Time and again, members come to us, ministers, they say, look, I just don't know why God doesn't hear me. I'm praying hard enough. I'm sure they are. I'm praying long enough. I'm sure they are. They might be praying 3-4 times a day. You might be praying 3-4 times a day. Very long hours. Put your heart in your prayers. You get on your knees, you pray, you get on your feet, you still don't feel God has heard you. Why? You have done what's required of you. But what made the difference? What makes the difference between the prayer which is going to be answered and the prayer which isn't answered? All right? Matthew chapter 6. Christ tells you how to pray, but afterwards he adds something. You see, in the world, brethren, I'm sure there are lots of people who pray. I'm sure you know them too. They pray very sincerely. But the way they pray must be different the way you and I pray. If we don't pray the way Christ tells us, then we are only doing what's required of us. Look, Matthew chapter 6, verse 31. He says, "Be not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear?" Now, those are the reasons most people pray in the world. Why do people pray? They want God to do something for them. Okay, but that's what's required. But Christ says, forget about all that. Don't be anxious. He says, seek you first, verse 33. Seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Look at the difference. If you pray to God, only ask what you need, and forget what's most important, your prayers aren't really answered in the Church of God. They cannot be. Your first and utmost prayer should be about God's kingdom to come. Mr. Weber was speaking about the conference we had a few days ago. And Mr. Armstrong gave a few verses for the ministers who went today to emphasize. And this was one of them. He says, let people know what God's kingdom is and how much we have to strive for it. This is the whole difference, but that's what makes us Christians. If my prayers is about me and my wife and you, I am an unworthy servant. My prayers must be first of all for God's kingdom to come, for God's righteousness to be fulfilled. That's something I can only do if I understand God's truth, if I have God's Spirit in me. Again, in the same chapters, chapter 6, verse 14, Christ tells you something else why perhaps your prayers are not answered. You might be paying your tithes. You might be keeping all the commandments. You might be loving your neighbor. Yet you might not be doing what God tells you, which is part of your over and above. Verse 14. Matthew 6, 14. He says, if you forgive men their trespasses, your Father will also forgive you. But if you don't forgive men, neither will your Father forgive you. Now stop and say, all right, you might be a very good Christian, really faithful to your wife, to your church, to your commandments. You pray to God day and night. You just don't grow. Could it be perhaps that you have not forgotten some sins against you, that you might not have forgiven someone? Christ is telling you, look, if that's the case, God won't forgive you. You better go and first of all find out what's wrong, change it, then come back. In fact, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 23, that explains that. He says, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go first be reconciled with your brother. Then come and offer your gift. Now there is the whole secret, brethren. If there is something between you and your brother or someone else, God is not going to really answer you unless first you go and reconcile with the person. This is the part which is hard for us to do. Sometimes impossible, but not with God. Do you see now what it means to be a worthy servant, even in prayers? Sometimes we don't pay attention to it, but that little difference, little in our minds, is what makes us to be worthy or unworthy. Let's take another example about the feast or the Sabbath. Let's take the feasts. Now I know a lot of you people here have been to the feast time and again, to the Feast of Tabernacles, or any feast of God. You have been very diligent, attended all the services, prayed during the services, after the services, evenings, had a good time. Yet you come back, you say, well, you know, I don't know, I just am not growing enough. What was wrong with it? The feast, no. The feast was fine. You did the best you could. Well, what's wrong with it? How come you did not keep God's feast as a worthy servant? Back in Deuteronomy chapter 16, God shows you how to keep a feast. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Verse 13. So you should keep the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. Verse 14. You shall rejoice in your feast. Now, rejoicing is fun or easy if you have friends, if you have a drink or two perhaps, if you're eating well. But God says you shall rejoice no matter what happens in your feast. Who is the you? He says you and your son and your daughter and your manservant and your maidservant and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gate or town. There's the whole secret. It's very possible you went to the feast or you rejoiced with your family, with your very close friends, but you forgot the stranger, the fatherless, the widow within the gate. Then you see your feast wasn't the feast because you only did what was required of you, not even. Because God tells you how far to go. Well, you didn't. You know, in the past when I used to be in this country for the feast, I haven't been for so many years. I go to France or somewhere else. But I would go and see some people had everything in their hotel rooms, all kinds of bottles of good wine and liquor, things like that, and some other places we went to anoint people, there was nothing. It breaks your heart. You just would like to say, look, those who have, can't you just share their all brothers in Christ? Share with someone else. I've seen people go out time and again to wonderful restaurants. Others could not even go to have one simple meal because they didn't have enough income on the second tithe. So, there's your difference. You only did what anyone could have done. You did not prove yourself to be a true Christian. Therefore, you see, if you go to the feast, when you go to the feast, even the Feast of Unleavened Bread, try to share. Really share. Whatever you can share. Go and serve as much as you can serve. Go over and above the call of duty. Then you are going to be a worthy servant before God. Otherwise you won't. I won't stress the point, it's a big subject there, but I want to get one or two more examples. Let's take the question of tithing. Well, as you mentioned, as you heard a moment ago, last Thursday, lunchtime, we had a meeting. And for the first time in my life, I heard a statement I've never heard before, and I hope I never hear again. The statement was like this. A member asked, or one of the ministers, do my tithes and offerings I sent to Mr. Armstrong in Tucson, are they tax deductible? If they aren't, I don't want to send. Strange. In other words, you're only paying tithe because they are tax deductible. If they aren't, then you won't send it. I said to myself, that's really strange. Now, you might give millions of dollars. If you have this attitude, you are an unworthy servant. Your offering isn't worth a penny before God. You might say, look, what? Look, God, I'm giving everything I have. Sure. But still, he won't hear you. He won't listen to you. He won't bless you. Is this perhaps some of the attitudes we have, some of us have? If you are a profitable servant or a worthy servant, here's your attitude. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, when you give your tithes, have this attitude. 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Verse 7. Says, each one must do as he has made up his mind. Fine. If you have made up your mind, do it. That's the average. That's the anyone will do it. Not reluctantly or under a compulsion for God, but God loves a cheerful giver. Now, you to be a cheerful giver, you really would like to do it. You want to feel you're doing right. And you should really feel that what you're doing is going to help. Not because you're going to get something back. Tithe paying is a law, but you can keep the law and still be unprofitable. Just like the Sabbath laws, you can keep the Sabbath and still be unprofitable. You might keep all of God's commandments and still be unprofitable servant. Like this young man who went to Christ saying, what do I do? The man was keeping all the commandments, yet he was unprofitable. Profitable servants. You might have paid and be paying all of your tithes month after month, week after week, regularly. You're still unprofitable servant unless your attitude is right, unless your heart is right. In Luke chapter 21, Christ shows again a wonderful example about how to pay your tithe, how to do something for someone. Luke 21, verse 1. He looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. Fine. Anyone can do it. You know, there are lots of people in this country, they give to charity because they have a lot of money, it's tax deductible. That's not a reward to you. So Christ is watching here, people just give the money, all the rich people. Verse 2, and he saw a poor widow put in 2 copper coins. Verse 3, he says, truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than any or all of them. But he didn't, did she? She didn't put that much, no. But what she put in was with the right attitude, and there's something more yet. Verse 4. Because the others gave from their abundance, but this woman gave out of her poverty all that she had. You see, this woman here proved to be a worthy servant. And perhaps the other rich people, they were unworthy, they were only doing what was required of them. To make this clear, perhaps let's go back to Matthew chapter 23. Remember Christ said that your righteousness should exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees. Here's your Pharisees, chapter 23. Did they pay tithes? Yes, they pay tithes. Do you pay tithes? I hope you do. Do you feel worthy? I hope you do. But if you don't, maybe you're guilty of it, just like the Pharisees were. Matthew 23:23. Christ says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe the mint and dill and the cumin and so forth, but says you have neglected the matters of the law, which are the law, the justice, the mercy, and the faith." Now let's go back. If you don't really do your share in justice and mercy and faith, your tithes are not going to make you a worthy servant. That's what Christ says. He says, you ought to have done these things without neglecting the others. In other words, sure you pay your tithes, but the way you pay, the manner you pay, and at the same time you show mercy and faith and love, that's what makes you a cheerful giver. That's what makes you a Christian. Otherwise, anyone can do it. I hope you get the point, brethren. That's the whole difference between a worthy and unworthy servant. Let me give you another example of a woman who was very close to God, and she did over and above what was required of her in Acts 9. Here we have a woman, an old woman, working hard, spending many nights helping people. Acts 9:36. So there was a woman at Joppa, disciple of Christ. Her name was Dorcas. She was full of good works. Not working well, but good works. So see, that's over and above again. With acts of charity. In those days, she fell sick and died. Okay? That's the end of the story, isn't it? No, it is not. Here's a woman, she had done everything while she was alive to help, to go over and above her duties. She never expected in life that what she did was going to be a reason for her to be brought back to life. Verse 38. As you know, the disciples heard that Peter was close by, so they asked Peter to come. And all the widows, verse 39, all the widows stood beside him weeping, showing coats and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. She didn't have to make coats and garments. But she was probably as good Christian as you and I. But she went over and above. She was a worthy servant. You know the rest, don't you? Peter went to her, but all the everyone else out of the room, and he brought her back to life. So the very fact that this woman had done over and above without realizing, without expecting something in return, to her it meant the difference between life and death. See, this is what I wish that we could all understand when we read the Bible. The difference between what makes us Christian and what makes us different from the other Christians. People in the world sometimes are better than us, and that's a very poor excuse, very poor case for us. We have to be not only better, but we have to do the impossible as far as they are concerned. And that impossible is done, I repeat, by Christ himself and not by you and me. I see so many students here. You know, students, I don't know what your attitude in classrooms. But even there, you can be good students and unworthy students. If you only do what's required of you, even if you make an A, you're still an unworthy student. You should excel. You should do over and above. You have to do extra work. About 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I remember students, they do all kinds of projects, all kinds of different things, not because they want to make an A, because they want to contribute. I wish we could regain again that type of feeling in the college. I'm sure we will. Because that's the college God started through Mr. Armstrong. That's the college we had. And so long as it's been back on the right track again, with Mr. Armstrong's help, I hope we can come to that point. We can do something to serve in a club, in the students' speech clubs, or any kind of work at the college. Try to excel. Try to do something different, something more, something extra. try to really be a worthy student. Let's continue. To be worthy before God, as I mentioned some time ago here, it is a question of all or nothing before God. You cannot love God unless you love Him with all your heart. And that difference is the Spirit of God in you, which makes you able to love God with all your heart. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, Deuteronomy 10, God tells us how to be a worthy servant. Verse 12. And now He says, Israel, what does God require of you? But to fear the Lord, your God, to walk in all His ways, to love Him, to serve the Lord with your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, to keep His commandments, the statutes of the Lord, which I command you today. Let's go back again. If you're just a Christian or in the world, you may love God, you might fear God, you might help Him, you might go His ways, but you might not go all the way. You might not love Him all the way. You might not love Him with all your soul. You might not fear Him all the way. And if we act like the people in the world, then we are unworthy servants. Our forefathers, you see, could not love God like this. You know why? Because they did not have God's Spirit. You could never love God with all your soul unless you have God's Spirit. You and I, we have that Spirit, therefore we should be able to do it. If we don't, then we are unworthy servants. If we behave ourselves like our forefathers did, we'll never make the kingdom. Because we have something they didn't have. We have a power they didn't have. To us, much is given, much is expected. If we love God the way the world does, we will not make the kingdom. That's what makes the difference between us and the world. That's the difference between a worthy and an unworthy servant. Let's take another example again. Let's take the marriage. Well, I won't comment about marriage because some people in the Church of God had some difficult marriages, I know. But let's take a good marriage. If your marriage is as good as one in the world, and nothing different, nothing else, then you are an unworthy servant. Let me explain this to you. It's interesting. Because you see, it is not hard for even people in the world to be faithful to each other. If you say, well, I'm faithful to my wife or to my husband, I've got a nice family, we're doing fine, that makes you a good servant, but unworthy servant. You're only doing what's required of you. You have to go a little bit further. In fact, in the sermonette you heard Dr. Kessler mention, I think it was very good because he helped me there. He just opened the way for me there. Christ tells you the difference between your marriage and a marriage in the world. He tells you what you should expect in a family. In a family which has God's Spirit. If you don't do what He says, then I repeat, you are an unworthy servant. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Refer to it again as you did. Ephesians 5. And he pointed out very well that some of us might have missed the point. And we have missed the point. Some people say, look, I'm trying to do the best I can with my wife. We just don't get along together very well. Or the wife will say, well, I don't understand my husband. What's wrong with us? What's wrong with you is very simple. God is not the center in your family. You are only being or acting like anyone else does. You have to act the way Christ wants you to act. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. Now, that as to the Lord makes the difference. Otherwise, you can have lots of wives in the world who could be subject to your husband. But if your husband leaves the church, you don't have to follow him. That isn't what Christ will do. Again, this is for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. As he mentioned again, Dr. Kessler did, to be the head of the family or wife doesn't mean a thing unless you act just like Christ would have acted. Again, that's what makes the difference. That's what makes you a worthy husband. That's what makes a difference, different marriage for you. Otherwise, you have a fiasco, if I may say, as a marriage, if you're in the church. Likewise, you go a bit further, verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. That part, as Christ loves, is the impossible part which Christ will do through us and for us. That's what makes a woman worthy. That's what makes a husband worthy. You see, brethren, too long some of us have been in the church and we have taken much for granted. Life in the church of God has become for some of us a routine type of a life. You keep the Sabbath, you keep the feasts, you keep the commandments, you pay your tithes, you pray, you get on your knees, you get up. Just like that man who went to see Christ, he said, look, Christ said he was an unworthy servant. I think too many of us in the church of God really have become lukewarm in our attitude toward God and just doing enough to get by. Not only that is not sufficient, but it makes you unworthy. You see, if you have a nice family, a nice atmosphere in your family, a wife, children, husband, even that, if you are doing what Christ says, if you're doing what the way he loved, the way he served, then you will go a little bit further. You will go, let me turn to the James chapter 1, James 1. This is what you should do with your wife and your husband and your children. You have to share your happiness with them. James 1, verse 26. If anyone thinks that he's religious, does not bridle his tongue, he deceives himself. Therefore, you see, it's vain. Verse 27, religion, he says, that is pure and undefiled before God and the Father is to visit the orphans and the widows in their affliction. Now, do you do that, brethren? Do I do it? Do we do it enough? I may have a good family, I might be a good husband, have a good wife, do we really go and share what we have with the orphans and the widows? How often do you hear from this pulpit, go and visit someone who is in need? That's what will make you a worthy husband, a worthy wife, a worthy child, a worthy member of God's church. I think all of us should understand, brethren, that there is something that we are all lacking. And that's hard work. We don't want to work hard. We're lazy. You heard a moment ago, Armstrong at 87 is still working so hard. To me, ever since I have known him, he has done nothing but hard work. Because he knows what it means to be a profitable servant. And suppose we just do what's required. We don't push enough. We don't work hard enough. As he himself said, he said, at 87, he says, the difference is I have to push a little harder. Yes, he has to push a little harder, but how about us? Does that mean we have to push a little less? No. We have to push harder than he does. Because we are younger, but we don't. It is high time we realize, brethren, that to be a Christian, it is a hard work. It takes pushing, it takes working, it takes going against your will, against Satan's temptation, against the will of the world. Are you really, brethren, a worthy servant. Christ showed us how to work. Could you read the Bible? Could you read all the Gospels? And see any place where you can find Christ taking things easy, taking life easy. No, every time you see him, he's working hard. Did he go over and above his duties? Yes. Did he do more than required of him? Yes. He came for a mission. He fulfilled the mission. But as he fulfilled the mission, he helped the needy, he healed the sick, he prayed for the enemies, he forgave the trespasses of those who were against him. He did. He showed us what to do. Yes, Christ did go over and above the call of duty. And he set us an example to do the same thing. The apostles did, Paul did. And today Mr. Armstrong is showing us the example. You know, some of us have a wrong impression. We think that if God doesn't see, if someone doesn't see, then we don't have to work hard. Let me tell you something. There was a story about, not too long ago, one of the American writers. You know, he's a doctor. He said one of his nurses was working day and night in the hospital and really just working so hard. The doctor went to her. He said, look, nurse, you're just doing too much. You better slow down. No one expects you to work that hard. And he says, in fact, he says, no one even sees what you're doing. Except few people. She says, doctor, if God sees, that's all that matters. Now that's exactly what I'm talking about. Doesn't matter what you're doing, if people see it or not. If God sees what you're doing, that's all that matters. It is high time that we realize, brethren, that in God's church, really God alone can judge, and He alone can reward. Therefore, you don't do because you want to be rewarded. You do because what you're doing, it is God doing through you with His Spirit. In closing, I would like to just give you one parable here, because it expresses perhaps the whole sermon here. It's found in Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25. Again, try to understand it is not only the world, it's all of us, because all of us are part of it. Christ is showing the difference. Matthew 25, verse 31. Between a worthy servant and unworthy servant. Matthew 25:31. When the Son of Man just comes in His glory with His angels, before Him, verse 32, will be gathered all nations. And that includes some of the people, some of the in the church too, of course. He will separate them, the sheep from the goats. Okay. So He puts the goats at the left hand and the sheep at the right. Now let's go all the way back to verse 41. Then He will say to those at His left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into eternal fire. For I was hungry, you didn't give me anything to eat. I was thirsty, you didn't give me anything to drink. Stranger, you didn't welcome me. Naked, you didn't clothe me. What was the answer? Look at the answer, verse 44. You see, they would have done this to Christ. But Christ says, Lord, they told me, Lord, when did we see you hungry? Or thirsty, or stranger, or naked, or sick? Verse 45. Truly He said, as you did not do to one of the least of those, you didn't do to me. See, this is the part which makes it difficult. You would do it for Christ, wouldn't you? You would do anything for Christ. In fact, people sometimes say, well, you know, if I knew God will want me to do it, I'll do it. You want to please God. You can never please God unless you do what He says and help those who are in need. You don't have to go and just help Christ. He doesn't need your help. If you go and help the ones who are in need, then you'll be helping Christ. So what happened to them, these people? They were pushed out of the kingdom, away from it, and thrown into eternal fire. But let's go back and see the other people. And I hope that's us. But look at the difference. Verse 34. Christ says, "Blessed are my Father, come, inherit the kingdom of God. For I was hungry, you gave me food. Thirsty, you gave me drink. Stranger, you welcomed me. Naked, you clothed me. Sick, you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me." See, this is over and above. This is something which is not perhaps part of you because you would do it to someone you love. You would do it for Christ. But you might not do it for a stranger. In fact, the people were surprised. Verse 37, they said, "Look, Lord, we didn't do it. We never saw you hungry. If we had seen it, we could have done it, but we didn't see you hungry or thirsty. We just didn't know it. We never saw you as a stranger." What did he tell them? He says, verse 40, he says, "Truly I say to you, you did it to one of the least of these. You did it to me." Do you get the point, brethren? To be a worthy servant is to do things that Christ would have done, or Christ would do through you. If you only do what is required of you as a human being, and not letting God's Spirit direct you to keep the commandments as Christ kept them in the Spirit and in the letter, you are an unworthy servant. If you don't go over and above helping, serving, and a cheerful, the right attitude, then you are an unworthy servant. God is not respecter of persons, and we must not be either. We have to help anyone who needs help. Love anyone who needs love to be loved. Be ready to answer any need. That will make us worthy servant. You know, we don't deserve anything. Yet God is going to give us the kingdom. He didn't have to. He's giving us more than we deserve. Then we also have to give more than someone else deserves. Don't ever judge anyone. Don't say he's not worthy, because you aren't worthy. I'm not worthy. If God is doing for you and for me more than we deserve, how much more you and I should also do the same. And if you do, then we can really be truly worthy servants before God.